This podcast delves into the dark, the depraved, and all things to keep you up at night. Listener discretion is advised. Now, sit back, pull the covers over your head, and allow yourself to be taken on a journey through the abyss.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Through the Abyss podcast. I'm your co-host, Ben.
And I'm your co-host, Mandy.
And today we will be tackling the final installment of the Casey Anthony case.
Yay, the last part. No more Casey Anthony after this.
Ding dong, the witch is gone.
From our podcast, anyway, she's still floating around this world, unfortunately.
That's true. She's having a good old time up in Florida.
I guess she's still in Florida. Who knows? So last time we discussed the evidence and Dr. G and all of her brilliance, and now we're going to jump into the trial and talk about Baez and Mason and how they're just total jackholes. But anywho, we can jump right in there and get this bad boy finished, finally.
Finished. Yeah.
Oh, the trial. This trial is what got me into court TV. I was glued to this thing every single day. I don't know how I managed to get a 4.0 in college.
I remember watching a ton of it, but I can tell you that 100% viewing of everything from beginning to end, that was me in the OJ trial.
I didn't get into the OJ trial. I remember being in high school watching the live footage of them chasing his Bronco down the highway, down the freeway. Okay, so the prosecution was Linda Burdick and Jeff Ashton. I thought they were phenomenal. I thought their opening statements were wonderful. Defense was Jose Baez and Chaney Mason. I think they're deplorable human beings. You won't change my mind about that. Yeah. So the breakdown of the prosecution's case, this is the evidence in the case will show no other conclusion can be drawn other than murder. That no mom is going to report her daughter missing for 31 days and do nothing. Or wait, no mom is not going to report her daughter missing for 31 days and do nothing. Then you have Casey's statements about a non-existent babysitter. Huh?
I said that's a fair assessment.
It's common sense, right? Common sense.
But again, it's common sense in normal people land.
Well, yeah, true. Well, we're kind of hoping the jury's going to think in
normal land. Right. You're appealing to a group of people who are normal people, hopefully. And so they should see things normally.
Mm-hmm. Right. Then you've got the car evidence, the dead body smell, the hair, levels of chloroform. And then, of course, there's a search for chloroform on the computer. Pieces of duct tape. There were three overlapping pieces of duct tape. Why was it put over the mouth and nose of a child? And then, of course, the defenses.
Let me add a couple things real quick right there. That, like, obviously, in a prosecution case, you also have to have a motive, right? An MO.
Well, it's on the prosecution. They have the burden of proof.
Oh, for the defense, yeah. But I would assume, though, the only reason I brought that up is because I would assume, though, that the defense or the prosecution did bring up at least the comments of the prior boyfriend saying he would never marry someone with a child. I think they were presenting that person.
Yeah, they put him on the stand.
Yeah. So my point is that they did provide a motive, which is she's this young woman who wants to be free and not have the burden of her daughter that's really restricting the life that she's trying to have. So yeah, I just wanted to add that in there.
Oh yeah. I mean, they called a lot of witnesses. You know, they called the detectives who initially interviewed Casey, and of course they were telling all about, you know, the crazy goose chase they went on and her demeanor and into how she's not acting the way a mom who is missing her kid should be acting.
Right. I mean, this is just such a startling case with such a startling outcome that I just wanted to put that out there. Just say that, like, if you're looking for holes in the prosecution, they did their job. This is not like a case of they just bungled this all to hell. Like the OJ trial, you could say the prosecution had some serious issues, right?
There were a couple little things that they probably should have addressed.
It's like, not sure how we got to that conclusion.
Yeah. And I know there were a few things that the jury wasn't able to hear. And again, this is why, you know, if it's something that happened in the case, I don't know why the jury wouldn't be allowed to hear it. Like right. Dr. Furman, who was the defense's guy as far as like the dead body smell, like he knew nothing about the dogs. He wasn't allowed to talk about the dogs.
No relation to Mark Furman, right?
No relation to Mark Furman. Furton, Dr. Furton. Furton. Sorry, Dr. Okay, Furton. sorry, you had my OJ brain going. But yeah, I mean, if the jury had heard him, because I mean, he flat out said that he would have, because he was kind of refuting the dead body testimony, the dead body smell testimony. But he came out and said that had he known about the dog evidence is something that is science that he prescribes to, he probably would have changed his view on the decomposition, the decomp smell.
Well, yeah, so that's something the jury didn't get to earlier, that dog evidence is not 100% of the time. And it wasn't allowed in the Kristen Smart case that I referred to earlier. It's not always admissible because of the fact that it's not 100% and that different animals can have different reasons for triggering at different times. But it's like literally like I'd have to look up the percentage, but it's up in the 80-90 rank. I mean, it's worthwhile. It should be.
Oh, yeah. Admissible. I mean, it's, and I think they do allow it, but for some reason, I think the defense purposely kept that information from their expert so he couldn't testify about it. Because if he did, it would have, you know, completely blown their whole, well, it's, you know, it wasn't decomposition. Yeah. It was a bag of trash that was back there for a month.
Hey, I'm not sure if you know the answer to this, but I'm just going to ask if you don't, you don't. But as far as other possibly inadmissible evidence, do you know if she was ever lie detected?
I don't think they gave her a polygraph.
Yeah, I've never heard of one either, but my guess, I'm just interested in it very, like the psychological stuff fascinates me, and I feel like Casey Anthony is someone who would beat a lie detector.
I believe that myself. I think she is so adept at lying that she could fool the machine.
Yeah, which she has no negative connotation in her when it comes to doing bad things and lying. So if you don't have that anxious physiological response to a polygraph, you're not going to trigger, right? So I don't think if she tells a lie, I don't think it registers to her that that's wrong.
Right, exactly. That's why if I was ever accused of doing something I didn't do, I would never agree to take a polygraph.
I have
anxiety on a normal basis. I wouldn't even I would need fail.
Because I would cry and tell the truth prior to that point.
Well, yeah, I mean, but I'm saying if I was accused of something I didn't do, I would still fail the polygraph because I would my anxiety you. Be like through the roof.
Oh, yeah, if it's something you didn't know, yeah, no, 100%. I'm a basket case, you know this. Like, I would also fail if I was innocent.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All I know is that if I was ever brought into a police, you know, interrogation room, I would be like, look, y'all, I didn't do anything, but I want a lawyer because I'm not going to play these interrogation games. We're done.
Yeah, because I've seen you abuse people on TV. I'm not trying to see you in real life. And it's hours of abuse. Right?
Exactly. They wear you down until you're just like, I killed JFK. I was the second person on the grassy knoll. You know,
you're like, ma'am, you weren't born yet. I did it.
Exactly. So that's a lesson from me to anybody listening. If you're ever brought in for interrogation, just be like, I need a lawyer. I don't have any recollection of anything. Good night.
Good night.
That's what you should say.
All right. So that was the prosecution. Defense. Yes.
Okay. The defense. God, I hate the defense. I can't. He's a scum of the earth.
Here's the defense. Nuh-uh.
Basically, that's what I feel like. Okay. So this jackhole, let me just tell you. I'm sorry, but this is why I don't think our defense system is fair, because you shouldn't be allowed to lie. And, you know, he brought up the fact that Baez's opening statement was Haley died in the pool. She drowned in the pool. George found her, yelled at Casey, and then disposed of the body. Here's a problem I have with that. If for some reason that happened, George, being a former police officer, would not dump her body in the woods 2 or 3 blocks from his house.
Yes. Also, another factor, George, being a former police officer, is knowledgeable enough to know that children, not to sound insensitive because it's a horrible thing, but children drown in pools yearly in mass quantities and nobody's going to jail for that. Right. Exactly. Other than possibly why wasn't someone watching this child, right? But it wouldn't be murder.
Right. I mean, at the most, it could have been child endangerment, you know, aggravated.
Yeah. But there's neglect. Very likely there's explanations as to how it could happen. I mean, it's something that unfortunately happens. It's the same as like a child being struck by a car, right? Like it's like okay. Back to normal reality land. No human being is going to not report that. Mm-hmm. And a police officer definitely would report that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Even if he did blame Casey, you know, I think he would have reported it, especially if he blamed Casey, you know, because yes. Baez is saying, yes. You know, that George was screaming at her that this is your fault. Your mom's never going to forgive you and you're going to go to jail for the rest of your life. If that was the case, why didn't he call the cops?
Yes. Yes.
I mean, that's just
and unless they're just all lying to the mom too. The mom we've seen with her reactions with Casey, her mom would have turned her in immediately.
She did actually. She had gotten Casey in the car and she called 911 immediately. She's like,
yeah, but I mean, if her husband found her grandchild in the pool and told her, it would have been immediately reported.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I don't think there would have been any doubt about that. You know, that's one of the stupid things that came up. The next stupid thing that came up was that, you know, Casey, he's trying to backpedal with all the lying that she's done. And, you know, he's trying to prove that her pathological lying stems from the fact that George had been sexually molesting her since she was, 8 years old, something like that. And that, you know, it's been ingrained in her nature to have to lie and do that kind of thing. So that's why she was lying and all this other stuff. Yeah.
Reflect for a second back to the phone call where she tells her dad he's the best dad, best grandpa, because he's catering to her. She loves him so much, right?
Well, I mean, you go back and you look at, and I'm not a psychologist, but I mean, I've done enough studies and I've had enough psychology classes to know that, you know, kids who have been abused, you know, sexually, emotionally, physically, whatever, they don't act the same. And she was a vibrant, popular person in high school. She played sports, you know, I'm sure that may not be the case for everybody. I mean, there may be some, obviously, people who differ from that pattern, but I think for the most part, if you go back and look at her growing up, you wouldn't see any sign whatsoever of any kind of sexual abuse or any kind of abuse whatsoever in that household. So I find it deplorable to think that, you know, not one single person, especially her mom being as close as she is to everything, that I think that's just as low as you can possibly go to create that.
Yeah. And I don't think there's any, I don't think that the him abusing her in that manner holds any water. And I don't want to throw any rocks at the parents because I think that they are definitely victims here.
Yeah.
I do just want to say that the way Casey is and the actions she's done at least are biological, right? And could stem from not having the best upbringing, but that's as much as I'll say on that.
Well, I could see that.
Yeah. A lot of what we do in the future, and I'm talking about even people like us who have just quirks and qualms and things that we don't do right. And like, nobody's perfect, but it stems from the attachment that you have with your caregivers at a very young age, up until like 3 years old, right? From like birth to like three, those are like the primary times that you need attended to by your parents. And I'm not saying that they like abused her or like, but it's possible that she wasn't picked up every time she should have been and things like that. I'm just saying that those factors could have occurred, because for someone to become a Casey Anthony, you either have to have just a crapshoot of the worst combination of genetics or issues with genetics plus some sort of environmental factors. But I don't think her dad, molested her or any of that. I think that's all bunk, right? That's all the smoke and mirrors defense case.
And that's, you know, that's an interesting point too, that you bring up. It's a whole argument of nature versus nurture. And I don't think it's something that you can quantify as a whole, because I mean, I know I'm a very strong, independent person. That's not something that was drilled into me. That's just who I am. But I know there are things in situations and how I react to things that have stemmed from issues that I've had you know, with my parents when I was younger, that type of thing. So it, for me, it's, it is nature versus nurture. It's a combination of both. And I think that, that plays a lot into most people. Mm-hmm. Casey, I think she, it's naturally ingrained in her. And I think she was born with the narcissistic personality and the pathological liar.
Yeah. And that's also a possible environmental factor that could lead, that could aid that as well, though, is if her parents were too attentive. You know, part of her narcissism could be that she was the star of the show. And you kind of mentioned, you know, a little bit earlier about how Kaylee coming into the picture kind of took her stardom away, right? So she was this, everyone loved her in high school. Her parents loved her. They were doting, attentive parents. I mean, that's still, it's still a parenting flaw to make your child on top of the world, right?
That's a very good point. I mean, maybe that plays into the fact of why she was getting so pissed off that she wasn't being treated as a victim, you know, because again, like you said, all the focus is being put on Kaylee instead of on her.
Right.
That's a good point. I never thought about that. That maybe hurt. Cause I mean, I could see Cindy and George being like helicopter parents, being like way overly protective and, you know, whatever Casey wants, Casey gets, and that type of thing. I could see that.
Yeah. And two things that your children have to have, and it's hard for parents, I get it, and you're trying to do the right thing, but they have to develop a certain amount of, number one, independence, but they have to also know that other people, their opinions, their thoughts, their needs, their desires, they matter, right?
Right.
You can't be the only one, right? It can't be like, don't worry about your friends. It's all about you, right?
Yeah. They can't have that sense that the world revolves around them.
Yes, exactly.
All right. That's a harsh reality to learn growing up. Okay, so that was an interesting point. I like that. I can't wait till you've got your doctorate and you're like actually testifying in some of these cases. So, all right. Another thing. Oh, and by the way, when Marcia Clark was talking to Chaney in her interview, Chaney flat out said there's nothing that they said that, you know, could be proven. Like all the stuff that they put out there couldn't be proved.
Yeah.
What a jerk. Another thing they tried to say and throw shade on is the guy who found her, the worker that found Kaylee's body, he could have been the one to put her there. I'm like, come on. That is over the top. But again, there they go, trying to throw the reasonable doubt.
Yeah, and I just speak for half a second on that. Right now, we're blaming the only person that did the right thing.
Exactly.
Because we're like, Casey didn't report it. If George saw her, he didn't report it, but he didn't. That was a lie. But the only person we're saying actually did the right thing might have done it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. He kidnapped Kaylee. He killed her. He put her there. And oops, he discovered her too. Come on. That's just ridiculous. Now Baez also with the duct tape, is that the duct tape kind of figured in that was like a huge component of the case. Baez suggested that it could have been used to tie up the bag, like we said previously. And then of course, Dr. G refuted that with, you know, there's no way because the mandible was still intact. So obviously it was there to hold it in place.
Yeah.
But their biggest thing.
Devil's advocate on that. Like the doctor would know better than I did and saw the actual bag and saw that. I mean, they had things, evidence and things that I don't, right? I don't know how tight all these bags were. To me, it's possible if the bag was tight enough on the face, it could hold the mandible in place. But I don't know. And the doctor, I'm sure, is smart enough to have looked at that.
But I mean, that could have been the case, true. But the problem is that actually, no, it couldn't have. The bag couldn't have been tight because animals had gotten to her.
Okay. So
the bag itself was a bit. But so, I mean, even if it had been tied around her thing, how did the duct tape get there? Yeah. The duct tape would have been on the outside, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, because it was still kind of attached.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You know, to then the skull disregard. Itself. Yeah. No, that's a good point. It's a very good point. But their big kicker, and I think this is what really, this is the only reason I can possibly come up with as to why the jury acquitted her, is that no one knows how Kaylee died.
Right.
Like there's no smoking gun, you know, there's no proof of how she actually died. And of course they tried to refute the body smell. They tried to say that the cops said that they didn't smell the decomp, but I don't believe that for a second.
Yeah.
At all.
No, we had kind of talked in some detail about the kind of the rabbit hole she sent the police on.
Yeah.
Coming to this portion made me feel in my mind, if she is just extremely intelligent and knows exactly what she's doing, the rabbit hole was 100%. So the body would decompose to the point where you couldn't actually look for toxicology and asphyxiation. She might be that smart that she's like, if I can just keep them away from this body for long enough, the body's not going to matter.
Yeah, that's definitely a possibility. And then that also ties in kind of to another thing that Chaney was saying, where the body was found was like 17.4 feet away from the curb. That there's no way that anybody, because there was a school right behind where the body was found. Chaney was saying that there's no way that people walking by wouldn't have seen the bag. And I know, and Marcia, and actually that one of the forensics CSI people who worked on the case recreated it. And when they put like a big plastic bag, like what Kaylee was found in, they recreated that and they put it in the exact same spot where it was found. Well, when they did it, theirs was actually, the area was a lot more grown up than it, or wasn't as grown up as it was originally. And even they couldn't see it. So they completely disproved Chaney's, you know, notion of, oh, well, there's no way somebody wouldn't have seen that body. But I mean, even the ME had proven with science that that body had been there from the early stages of decomposition.
Well, and Kaylee was 3, right?
Yeah.
This isn't a huge body.
No, it's not. It's not. And I mean, if it looks like it's a bag of trash.
Right. Nobody's looking
at a bush. Nobody's going to go like, oh, look, there's a dead kid in that bag. Nobody's going to be, especially kids, because this is like an elementary school.
You're going to drive by, and if you saw it, you'd be like, some jackalope threw trash in the bush. That's the city I live in. What the hell, you know?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So getting into the medical examiner, because Dr. Garavaglia was like, she was the primary medical examiner. But of course, the defense brought in their own. Dr. Werner Spitz, and I didn't like this guy at all because he tried to refute Dr. G's testimony by saying that her autopsy was shoddy because she didn't open the skull. And Dr. G actually wasn't, this is one thing I think the prosecution failed on. They should have called her back to refute that testimony. Now, whether or not they weren't allowed to, I don't know. All I know is that she wasn't called back to refute that. But in previous interviews, she kind of went back and explained there wasn't any reason for her to open the skull because it was a dry skeleton. Literally, they could see inside the skull. And the only thing that was in there was dirt at the base of the skull. So had they actually opened it, it would have broken up into pieces in their hands. And Dr. Werner, on the stand, Dr. Spitz said that he had opened it and that is in fact what happened. It broke. And then this idiot, he's like, oh, but I didn't know I broke the skull. Like, dude, how could really, come on. So this is the defense's expert on their medical examiner, which is, oh my God. And then Baez, of course, you know, he's such an arrogant prick. He claimed that anyone could come off the street and say the same thing and that everything Dr. G says, it's not science. The defense flat out claimed that no scientific evidence, there wasn't any scientific evidence to name the cause of death, which technically is true, but there is the manner of death. And again, that goes back to the circumstances, you know, the body, the scene, all that. Dr. G says that all of her conclusions were scientifically defendable and that she can reliably say it's a homicide. She doesn't know the means for which that homicide occurred, but the circumstances of death did not fit anything other than a homicide. I'm sorry, but that to me is good enough, coming from a reputable, you know, medical examiner.
Yeah, and throwing in the other factors. If you reported it immediately and then we can't determine death, then I'm like, maybe. Yeah, but after 30 days of not reporting your daughter missing, and now we can't determine cause of death, you did it.
Well, I mean, if she had been reported and found, you know, within a few days, they could have, there's would have been no doubt whatsoever. I mean, they could have told right then and there she had drowned in a pool because they would have had her lungs. Yeah. You know, they could have done a toxicology report and shown, yes, there was chloroform in her system or no, there was not. So, I mean, if she had been found right, early.
That's what I'm saying. If she had been found early and everything was inconclusive, then you'd be like, maybe this person didn't do this. Right?
Oh, absolutely.
But the fact that you hid it for 30 days and now it's inconclusive doesn't help your case at all in my mind. Oh, in the legal world, apparently it does.
Well, it's 12 jurors, apparently it does. But Dr. G also, you know, because she's been a medical examiner for a long time, so she's seen pretty much anything under the sun, but she testified that Casey's behavior isn't how a mother reacts to an accidental death. You know, she said that, you know, no matter what the circumstance is, that the mother always calls 911 and that there was no evidence that showed there was a drowning.
I was just gonna say, and instead of going to like hot body contests and being out there partying and stuff, you're gonna be like, if this nanny, Zanny the nanny was real, you'd be like, I'm gonna find that B word and I'm gonna whoop her ass and I'm gonna get my daughter.
Exactly. You know, I would think she would take all those people that hang out at the club and her boyfriend and everything and try to track this person down and take care of her herself. But
yeah, she'd be leading the manhunt.
Exactly. With the kind of attitude that she's shown so far. So Dr. G also wasn't allowed to tell the jury that chloroform dissipates from the body within days. So because the body wasn't discovered for months, she can't rule out that chloroform was used. She can't rule it out that it wasn't used due to the length of time that the body was out there. So that's another piece of evidence that the jury did not get to hear.
Yeah.
You know, the closings, I mean, they were both, you know, pretty much what you expect as far as, you know, Jose, he wasn't allowed to bring up, the judge did not allow him to bring up the molestation again, which is good because that was just such a bunch of crap. You know, but he brought up everything else that he reiterated in the opening statement, as did the prosecution. And I mean, again, I'm not a lawyer. I've never been to law school, but I thought the prosecution's case, while, you know, a lot of it is circumstantial, I thought it was more than enough to get beyond reasonable doubt without a question.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't know. It was so just disgusting to me, really. And yeah, it was just gross.
And to me, it's like, the major factors are just blaring, and we talk about them over and over, but it's because they're just ridiculously these huge flags, right? Not reporting for 30 days is the number one thing, right? That's crazy. But then there's no plausible, and I say plausible because now you're saying to her dad, right? But there's no plausible other suspects, right? To the police, he was never really another suspect. There's no other suspects.
Right.
No other suspects. And you didn't report for 30 days. You went about living your life. You showed no concern for your actual child. Like, the evidence is overwhelming.
I think it is,
in my mind.
I think it is, too. You know, but I think what it boils down to is the fact that she's this pretty young girl who seems to have everything, you know, seem to be together, if you want to put it that way.
And I think that is a factor. Is they look at her like she's this pretty young woman who's got her life together. She's got her whole life ahead of her. And like, but to me, being together is evidence, right? Like, she should be hysterical. Her hair should look crazy. She shouldn't have makeup on in court. She should look like a basket case. She should be like, where's my baby? Like, well, she knows where she is at that point, but she'd be like, why did this happen to my baby? Who did this? Find this person, right? She should have never, she should be in jail being like, I don't even care what you do to me. Just find who did this to my daughter. That's what a mother would do.
Right. That's what, well, any normal mother. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. And, you know, and I think really it came down to the fact that because this was a death penalty case to start with. I think the jury just looked at her and said, we don't know cause of death. And I don't know, I guess they just thought the evidence was too circumstantial, which is just really blows my mind because, I mean, I'm a big believer in actions speak louder than words, and her actions do not indicate innocence.
No, but you're right. Like, from a legal standpoint, though, they don't know the cause of death.
Right.
Um, they've been told so many lies that unless they really dive into it and look at it, and like, we can only kind of speculate what a motive would be, right? You're like, well, why would a mother kill their child? They wouldn't. Like, a normal person would be like, they wouldn't want to do that. That doesn't make any sense, right? Like, so it's like, they don't have a pure 100% positive motive, right? And they've got zero evidence of the toxicology because the body's, you know, because of all the smoke and mirrors, the body hasn't been found for over a month, right? So there's not a lot of evidence we can get from it. I mean, so I'm just looking at it from like the legal side, which unfortunately isn't the side that makes sense in this case, right? Where it's like,
right,
it's just, there's nothing conclusive, right? Even though it's clearly conclusive.
Yeah, I mean, as far as motive, I think, you know, just the fact that the boyfriend admitted that he told her that he could never marry somebody.
I mean, to me, that's a motive. She wants to be unafraid.
Because, I mean, it happened, you know, he told her that, and then, next day or two, Kaylee's gone.
How old was Casey when this happened?
22.
Okay, so 20s. she was fairly young. I thought she was like 25, 26. Mm-mm. But 22, 23, still, it's like some of the Audrey Iacona case. Audrey Iacona was a 17-year-old cheerleader in a high school who, like, nobody knew she was pregnant because she didn't gain any weight. Like, it would have been life-altering for her to all of a sudden have a baby. I'm not condoning, right? But I'm saying Casey Anthony, she has a boyfriend. She's 20-something. Her parents already know that she's got a child. They love the child. Her life is good. Like, it doesn't make sense for her to do it, right? So, like...
Well, yeah, and that's the thing, though. I mean, if she was to the point where she's like, I just can't be a mom. I have too much I want to do. She could have just given the kid to... Exactly. Grandparents would have raised the kid happily. I mean, they probably would have disowned her.
Yeah, they would have been very upset. But it's like, look, I'm not going to be what this child needs. So I'm either giving it someone else or you're taking it. Her 100%, her parents, the way they reacted throughout the whole thing, they would have taken this child.
Oh, without a doubt. I have no doubt in that whatsoever.
And instead of murdering your child, like, why don't you just abandon your child with your parents? And I'm not saying that that's a good thing, but kids are abandoned with the grandparents fairly often. There's a lot of grandparents who don't get to enjoy their retirement ages because they're raising children, because they have deadbeat children themselves who have left them with the, like, Casey could have just disappeared with her boyfriend and forgotten about her child instead of killing her child.
Oh yeah. I mean, my grandparents, you know, they were a huge part of my grandparents are more like my parents than they were my grandparents. So, I mean, it does happen. And for me, I think it's kind of, it goes back to her being such a narcissist. I don't think she could have handled somebody else raising her kid because she could have done it so much better. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yes. Yes. And she loses the whatever adoration she still has that remains from her parents at that point.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, I thought there was plenty motive. I thought there was plenty evidence, but unfortunately the jury did not, because on July 5th, 2011, they only deliberated for 11 hours. This was like, a 7-week long trial. They deliberated for 11 hours and they came back with not guilty on first degree murder, not guilty on aggravated child abuse, not guilty on aggravated manslaughter of a child. They convicted her of 4 misdemeanor counts of lying to the cops.
In the circuit court for the 9th Judicial Circuit in and for Orange County, Florida, State of Florida versus Casey Marie Anthony. As to case number 2008-CF-15606-0. As to the charge of first degree murder, verdict as to count 1, we the jury find the defendant not guilty, so say we all, dated at Orlando, Orange County, Florida, on this 5th day of July, 2011, signed 4 person. As to the charge of aggravated child abuse, verdict as to count 2, we the jury find the defendant not guilty, so say we all, dated at Orlando, Orange County, Florida, this 5th day of July, 2011, signed 4 person. As to the charge of aggravated manslaughter of a child, Verdict is to count three. We, the jury, find the defendant not guilty. So say we all, dated at Orlando, Orange County, Florida, this 5th day of July, 2011, signed for person. As to the charge of providing false information to a law enforcement officer, verdict as to count four. We, the jury, find the defendant guilty of providing false information to a law enforcement officer as charged in the indictment. So say we all, dated Orlando, Orange County, Florida, this 5th day of July, 2011, signed for person.
I don't understand how they came back with not guilty on aggravated child abuse. She didn't report the kid missing.
Yeah.
That to me says you don't give a shit about your kid if you're not going to tell the people who can actually go out and find her.
Yeah. I mean, that 100%, I think you said it kind of became a law after it.
Yeah.
But how not reporting that your child's missing for 30 days is not already a crime or was right. not already a crime is mind-boggling.
Right. So in the end, Casey was sentenced to 4 years in jail for lying to the cops. She was released July 17, 2011 for time already served and good behavior. So while she was in prison during, you know, her arrest up through the trial end, she basically, that was her punishment. That was the only thing she got for killing her kid. That and, yeah. you know, becoming the most hated mom in America, probably the world.
And I remember after that case, she continued, you know, from photographs and things that popped up along the internet, continued her party life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Didn't look like a mourning mother. And throw out the piece of speculation that was involved as far as her not having enough money to pay her lawyer. So some believe that she paid him with sexual favors. And so I'm not sure if there's truth to any of that, but that's stuff that's been speculated.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Now she currently lives in Florida with one of the investigators from her original case, who's kind of like her sugar daddy. She's living with, taking care of her. Yeah, she's just kind of used people all along the way.
Yeah. Yeah. She's one of those people that if I ever ran into you on the street, I don't know how I would react. I don't know if I would be like, just walk the other way or if I would punch her. I would want to punch her. I probably would punch her. Not that I condone violence. Violence is bad.
I kind of feel like she's a person you wouldn't see on the street because she seems like somebody who would need to hide. But then she's kind of how you kind of view her, which it seems there's a definite narcissistic extent there that it's like, I don't think she can hide, right? She's got to have some sort of limelight, right? So she's always going to pop up every couple of years somewhere doing something crazy.
You know, I'm really surprised that she hasn't, you know, getting back to the narcissistic part, it's kind of shocking to me that she hasn't come out and admitted to it because she obviously can't be prosecuted for it again. So in my mind, I kind of feel like she wants to say, you know what, I did it, I'm smarter than you, and I beat you. So go F yourselves.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. I mean, but as people age, right, they're even with disorders, there is sort of a regression generally because of maturation. And I do want to put out there that prior to 25 years old, the prefrontal cortex, which is involved with decision making, is not fully intact.
Right.
So Casey Anthony today is not the same human being she was then. But the amount of disorder that she appeared to have back then couldn't all be gone. I'm just saying that she might not need as much of that limelight as she used to.
Well, that's a good point. That's a good point. She wasn't fully developed when this happened, but I don't know. It's just one of those very infuriating. This is one of those things where I think our justice system really let Kaylee down.
Yeah. Yeah, and I get that it's not a thing, and it's probably never going to be a thing, and it's part of making sure that innocent people don't go to jail and make it. But to me, things like not reporting your child for 30 days, right? If that wasn't a law at the time, as a judge, I think he should have the ability to say, that's not a law, but it should be, so we're going to put you in prison for it. You know, like, I get that that's not a thing, but it should be.
Oh, in a perfect justice system world, that would be wonderful.
Can also see how that would lead you into a very tricky situation, right? Because what do you got a judge who's not fully hinged. And he's like, look, yeah, this crazy thing isn't a law, but it's about to be the day, son.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's one thing you got to take into consideration, too, that judges are human, too. And
yeah,
they may not be the best character.
Right.
But I think Judge Perry is pretty cool. I mean, yeah, I think he gave an interview where he said he was even shocked at the verdict.
I feel like the judges, I get it, they're mostly just a moderator there, right? Mm-hmm. But they should be allowed to override bad verdicts. And I don't mean override it like you say she's innocent, I'm going to say she's guilty and put her in jail for 30 years. That's a lot of power. But to say, I disagree with the outcome of this case, we're going to retry.
Well, you can't, because that breaks constitutional law of being able to be tried by your peers.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's loopholes. You know what? I guess you just kind of have to hope that the justice system works 90-something% of the time. Unfortunately, cases like Casey Anthony and OJ are just not the times that they worked.
Yeah. And you know, on the same twist of that, there are people who do get imprisoned wrongfully. You know, so the flip side of that is true as well. So
yeah,
our justice system is by no means even close to being perfect.
No, it's not, again, even in the 90%. No, that was optimism.
Well,
but you got to hope it's more right than wrong.
Yeah. But I mean, the problem is that it's in the hands of human beings, and yeah, we're all flawed. So that's kind of just, I guess that you just got to hope for the best. All I know is that if I ever get, you know, convicted or, you know, accused of doing something, I'm pleading the fifth. Getting my lawyer right then and there.
To go into the fallibility of human beings just for a second, though, I do want to mention, like, stuff that most people are aware of, like, such as groupthink, right? Like, if you got a jury of 12 people, people tend to be swayed by the majority. It's mm-hmm. just something that happens. It's like, it's how you can have the rise of someone like Adolf Hitler. Like, soon as people start to think away, like, you're like, maybe I also think this way, right? But not only that, but that these trials take so long. Mm-hmm. Right, that by the time these juries are sitting there for days trying to deliberate, even if you're the one guy that's like, she's clearly guilty, mm-hmm. eventually they can wear you down where you're just like, you know what, I guess I'm not sure with no reasonable doubt. You know what I mean? Like, you can wear people down. So I'm saying it's not just the fallibility of humans, it's the fact that the more humans you put together, you would think it'd be better, it's worse.
Yeah, because then you get into mob mentality where it's the one leading the many. And because, I mean, power of suggestion is, well, I mean, we've seen it just as being paranormal investigators, just something as listening to an EVP, like you hear one thing and I say, no, this is what it says. And you go back and that's what you hear it said because I suggested that to you. I mean, it's an easy thing to do.
I'm totally off topic, but you sort of what you just said, I've got to look back on what it was, but there was an EVP that you and Laura were talking about saying what people thought it said, or you guys thought it said one thing and then someone pointed out that it was something else, and I heard something totally different than the other two. So I'll listen to it again and I'll tell you what it was, but I heard something.
I think
totally
it says
different.
Who's there. I still think it says who's there.
Oh, and then they said it was I'm listening.
Yeah, I hear who's there, because when I went back and put it on that, yeah, I heard who's there.
I hear something totally different than both
really
of them. And I'll listen to it again, and then I'll immediately let you know what I think it is.
Okay.
I mean, we kind of alluded to all of that, so it doesn't matter. But like that, her parents are still to this day like have said the only justice they would ever feel for Kaylee is if Casey gets held accountable. Like they know she did that shit. Still.
Oh, George doesn't talk to her.
Yeah.
They have no relationship anymore. Right? No, Cindy has been trying to have a relationship with her, but George absolutely will not, and I don't blame him.
That's weird, because she seemed to be the one that was more, I mean, not that they both love their granddaughter, but she was the one that was like so gung-ho, and now she's trying to have a relationship with her.
Well, she also kind of perjured herself on the stand, because she went back, because like in the 911 call, she said that she smelled a dead body. When she went back on the stand, it was like, oh no, I was mistaken. It was just trash that was in there for a month. So
she did end up trying to protect her daughter.
Yeah.
You know, and after... I didn't want to, when I was talking about the attachment theory, that's like a legit thing, right? Like your very young childhood, and I didn't want to throw anyone under the bus. That's why I was like, I'm not trying to blame the parents or whatever. But the reasoning was, because I think George is probably the most sane of all of them. I feel like the mother's probably a little cuckoo. The attachment theory is based almost 99.9%. It's always on your primary caregiver. It's because your mother is not properly attending to you as a child. So I didn't want to just say, like, I feel like her mother kind of made her the way she is, but I think she was definitely a factor.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to pinpoint, like, as far as genetics go, I'd say it's probably more on her mother's side.
Yeah. And you kind of mimic what you see, right? Like, if her mother wasn't doing the right things with her, then she might not have been doing the right thing. But in her case, it's so weird. It could be that they were over attentive. I don't know.
Yeah, I think I would probably lean more towards the over attentive, like helicopter parents with them, if I had to guess. But
which is good, because that's what we have on air. But in my mind too, I'm like, sometimes people seek that attention.
Mm-hmm.
Not because they used to get it, but because they never did, right? So seeing Kaylee get the attention her mother never gave her could also be really flip her out.
That's true.
Okay.
Well, for our first true crime podcast, that went really well. It went really quick. I was kind of surprised at how fast we went through everything.
Yeah, I mean, your timeline was very helpful, right? Just kind of having the breakdown in order. I mean, it's like both of us lived through that case and have seen a lot of stuff on it over the years, but it kind of all gets muddied together. So it's good to have a thorough breakdown of kind of the way things went. So yeah, I think it was a productive look into that case for sure.
Yeah, I'm definitely glad it's over so I don't have to research her anymore, because I spent the last
you get too mad
3 weeks pissed off. I think I put probably that. About 20 I mean, hours
and,
into this.
So, and I know it's always going to be an agree to disagree scenario for us, but it's like you get angry and I do feel sorry for her. You know, I feel sorry for the parents as well. I obviously, in any circumstance like this, right, all of these horrific events that happen, unfortunately, throughout society, there's no winners, right? Nobody won. Like, even if Casey Anthony doesn't understand right from wrong and she thinks she's okay, like, she's not, right? Her daughter's gone. She doesn't have her parents really actively participants in her life right now. She's lost a lot. So I'm not saying she shouldn't lose a lot, but I'm saying I also don't think that she's psychologically well, right? So there is some sorrow there for sure.
Right. Absolutely. Well, Ben, we got another episode under our belts. Thanks so much for tuning in to Through the Abyss podcast. And until next time, keep it weird.
Spooky stuff.